You're listening to Drinking on the Job, DOTJ. I'm your host, John Coyle. Drinking on the Job is a toast to the culture of food, wine, and all things fermented. We'll be talking with winemakers, musicians, artists, late-night bartenders, scoundrels, and more. It's time to grab a glass before its last call. There's not a wine distributor today that has a more interesting story than Dana Anderson, an Air Force veteran with a tour in Kuwait, who then transitioned to the FBI. A single glass of wine transformed her life. Today, she owns and operates the International Wine Company in Florida. Take a listen. Have you ever been in earshot of somebody saying something that's so jarring that you get pulled in? We were doing a wine tasting, and out of the corner of a room, I hear somebody talking about Dana Anderson. She's the president and owner of the International Wine Company, a distributor of very fine wine. But if that's not cool enough, she also was an FBI agent. So, so I had to grab her talk about how she got into the wine business and her past. And thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me. It's exciting to do this.
Yeah. So you're kind of like the Dana Scully from X-Files for me. This is why I was...
So I wasn't an agent.
Okay. But you worked for the FBI.
I worked for the FBI for 6 years in a support position.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's still pretty freaking badass.
Pretty freaking cool. It was an amazing experience.
So it's funny because I was reading that J. Edgar Hoover was the one said there's no women in the FBI. There's not going to be any agents, nothing. And the only thing I thought to myself originally was like, right, because he's the only one that gets to wear a dress. Because as we now know, he was a cross-dresser. But 1972 was the year they let women become FBI agents. That's like 50 plus years ago. That's kind of crazy, right?
That's it seems like that wasn't that long ago.
Mm-hmm, I know. So tell us, give us just a brief shot of as a child, and I know we're going to talk about you. You enlisted at 17. So where does this come from? This vision.
Looking back, it's where did that come from? I'm originally from Brooklyn, New York.
Right on.
Yeah, and moved down to Florida at the age of 7. And went to elementary, middle, and high school in Brevard County, where the International Wine Company is headquartered now. And at 17, I enlisted in the Air Force. A few thoughts went into that. Part of it was just, I wanted to, I think at a very early age, I wanted to get out of my comfort zone. And, mm-hmm. I was in theater in high school, and somebody... I think no one would expect to go into the Air Force and the FBI for a decade.
Is your family military at all?
No, that wasn't really a motivator. Yeah.
How do your mom and dad feel about you enlisting at 17?
Yeah,
that's an interesting one.
So they were pretty against the idea, and then the Air Force recruiter, told them that. Well, I initially told him I wanted to go to Italy and be stationed there. And he said, yeah, absolutely. That would happen, in due time. And I think my parents heard that and said, okay, well, that sounds fine. And I think they were pretty hesitant, but they signed on the line. I gave them a pretty solid plan of what I was going to do afterwards, which there's actually an article written in the Florida Today when I was a senior in high school. High school graduate is enlisting in the Air Force to become an FBI agent. And
so when you were enlisting, you knew you wanted to be in the FBI.
Yeah. So at the age of probably 16 or 17, I went to the a local office in Brevard, and I asked them, what do I need to do to be an agent?
Wow.
And they said, it'd be a good idea maybe for you to go into the military and get a master's degree. And at that age, I said, done, and I set out and I did it.
But was there a movie that inspired you to work for the FBI? Was it a feeling of patriotism? Was it, that's why I asked if your family was in the military, because that follows suit, right?
No, I think a lot of it was just, it seemed like a pretty challenging task. Mm. It seemed like something that was really difficult to obtain. It was, you know, it seemed like just a far off dream.
Right.
And that in my life has always been intriguing to me, no matter what it is. And it's like, how are you living unless you're doing something that's just pushing you beyond your comfort zone, you know, right. You know, your boundaries that you live in day to day, and what a fulfilling life it's been. It's like, yeah. I feel like I'm cat with five lives at this point.
We're going to talk about it. It seems like you've had five lives.
Yeah, definitely.
So then you actually did get deployed to Kuwait, right?
Yes.
So little taste of what that was like, what kind of weapons you were working with.
I was 19 years old. It was March 2007. I had a living will at that point. If anything was to happen, wow. You know, I already had it written out. If, you know, my parents, they would get any savings I had, or I didn't have much at that point, but
just the fact that you're planning this at like
wild.
Such a young age is crazy to me.
Yeah. And I look back, that makes sense. I'm a pretty, you know, analytic and right. detailed driven woman.
Did you like working with like weapons? I mean, Kuwait must have been pretty hairy, right?
I loved it. Yeah. I carried an M4 rifle and a M203, a grenade launcher was attached to the top of it, or to the bottom of it, sorry.
Did you ever fire it?
Not in action, no, right. Only in training scenarios. But and I had a M249, so that was an automatic weapon, which I never fired that in, you know, a combat situation, but I would have to maybe show that I had it with me a couple of times. And
what percentage of women were you surrounded by at this point?
Not too many.
Right, that's what I'm trying to figure, like, what it couldn't be.
We slept in a small room. There were six girls in that room. I mean, I didn't work with many. It was mostly men. Right. I think my whole career, I mean, between the Air Force, FBI, and now the wine industry, it's always been male dominated.
Right.
So it's just like finding your...
But that doesn't stop you.
No.
Yeah. You are in the Air Force, and then you're like, okay, so my next step. But now you have to apply past the physical, all this kind of
yes.
stuff to be in the FBI.
Yeah. So my enlistment finished in 2009. I enlisted with the goal of getting my undergraduate degree, which was very challenging. I was active duty, so full-time with the Air Force and then with a deployment. But I was, you know, I've always been very into school studying. So did that, my first enlistment, got out and went to the University of Central Florida for my mm-hmm. first master. And because those agents that I spoke to told me that was a good right. idea, to, that was going to make me more competitive. So did that. And at that point I started to apply. I applied to the Secret Service at that point and the FBI. And it was, kind of a neck and neck application process. It was very, very long. You know,
yeah.
You can Google all that. It's, you know, polygraphs and physicals and
right.
interviews and
yeah, yeah.
people knocking on your neighbor's door. Like, who is she? Where does she go?
Yeah, of course, they have to dig deep.
Yeah.
They have to dig deep. But academically, it's really difficult. I mean, the testing and... you have to be pretty bright.
Yeah, I mean, they let me in. So. Yeah.
And what's the physical like task like? You're doing combat training, so you're boxing, you're doing martial arts, you're doing.
Yeah, I did a lot. I mean, a lot of that in the military. So, you know, I feel like it was pretty second nature, I guess. To
and did you like it?
I really enjoy shooting on the shooting range.
Right.
I love that. It's so. You know, that's also a very competitive sport. It's complicated. It requires a lot of focus, and I loved it. I still love it.
Is it your strongest skill you've taken from the FBI and your military training is your firearms expertise?
Maybe that and working in spreadsheets. probably.
Wow.
Yeah, which I do a lot these
That's
days.
Kind of the opposite of like shooting a gun.
Yeah,
like,
it's not all what the movies
XL,
look like.
Right.
So everybody thinks it's, you know, knocking down doors every day.
You're a badass with pivot tables too. Is that
yeah,
it? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like well-rounded.
So we're going to do, you're going to give me one cool case you worked in the FBI, and then we got to build a bridge to the wine world. So
okay.
One cool case with the FBI.
I always say my high, you know, high moment in the bureau and working in Puerto Rico at the time was after Hurricane Maria, mm-hmm. and we did these, you know, humanitarian missions, and it was just amazing to see the agency work together
right.
and, you know, kind of help the entire island during a period of pure devastation.
Right.
It's not an investigation, but that was a pretty magical moment. It was really, really hard. You know, that hurricane was a Category 5, and it completely devastated the island.
Wow.
And especially in areas that were already not, you know, very strong in terms of infrastructure. And
Sam, what's the primary goal every day when you're facing that kind of calamity? Is it help with the infrastructure, get water, get food, help civilians? What's the
getting up and just to keep going and keep, you know, a positive attitude? And that's one thing about, you know, I think Puerto Ricans and being on that island was it was, you know, no matter what people were faced with, it was always a moment to celebrate or to dance or, you know, to stay positive. And that was a beautiful, beautiful thing. That was one of the highlights of my career, I think. So,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's very cool. Okay. So now everyone I know who's ever been on this podcast, 99% fall in love with the wine business from a glass of wine or a bottle of wine that they had. So what was yours?
Mine was a glass of Tokaj during a WSET course while I was in the FBI in Puerto Rico. And it was that week we studied the history of, you know, how the wine was born and all of that combined totally captivated me. And when I tasted it, it was like my aha moment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And at that point I just said, wow, there has to be more to this. I was just like everything else, full stream ahead, super interested in learning more.
Yeah. I mean, there's so many books written on the history of wine and getting through the First World War, the Second World War, the devastating vineyard. The history of wine is incredible in itself. But so you were in the FBI and you decide, oh, I want to do something extra. I'm going to do the WSET wine class.
Yeah, that was a interesting kind of path to my next career. Mm-hmm. I met a really great WSET instructor who's a great friend of mine, and he invited me to be part of his tasting group, and I took the WSET 3 course in Puerto Rico, and a few other things happened. My dad passed, a lot of life-changing events kind of, you know, all combined. I had worked all the way up until that point to become an FBI agent. So I passed, right. you know, phase one, phase two, every test. It was like next step was a date right. in Quantico, you know, for
yeah, wow.
to go through the training.
Right.
And I kind of said, you know what? I'm not sure if this is what I want. And it's like you work so hard to get to a certain point.
Sure.
And it's like whoever you pray to, God, or I don't know, it's like tell them your plans and they're going to laugh at you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so probably your life moment, your dad passing, probably shed a lot of light onto,
yeah.
like, what am I doing? And I want to make sure that I'm happy.
Definitely. Yeah. And I think that was a pinnacle moment. And it was, okay, how am I fulfilled? And it's not anything against, you know, the military or the FBI or any government agency. It's just at that moment, digging deep, like, what is going to fulfill me? Is it, and everybody, you know, everybody has their right. thing, whether it's, you know, pursuing a particular industry or whether it's money or living in a certain place. And for me at that moment, I said, I have to learn more about this. And there's a small off ramp to the highway I'm on. And right. if I don't go now, I think I'll always regret not doing it.
Good for you. That takes courage, but it sounds like you were driven. I get the feeling there's no stopping you anyway once you decide to do something.
No.
So, because I'm looking, we're going to talk, because I mean, so we'll dive into the wine now. First, we're going to talk about Domaine de Montvac, one of my favorite producers, and I match the wine to the person sometimes. I love Cecile. This is five generations of winemaking. They're certified organic. I know your portfolio is filled with this philosophy of sustainability, organic, and I always say, let's save the planet and let's do it one glass at a time. Cecile's been doing this. She does a Vacaras, a Gigondas, and a Cote de Rhone. Third generation female winemaker. Her daughters, now she took it from her mom. Now her daughters are running it. So it's women owned. And I just love the wines. They're all super old vines. They're just gorgeous. And I love, as we're sitting here today, it's cold. We're like, something about red wine when it's cold.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. It's delicious.
So now you're like, okay, I'm on the off ramp. I'm out of here. I am going to, and you end up in Italy?
Yeah.
So why Italy?
So,
although the Air Force guy said you can get to Italy, and that hooked you.
Yeah,
there,
that
right?
was a long time away at this point. That was back in 2005 when I enlisted. At this point, it was 2018 at that point. Yeah. So, while I took a little trip after I had that aha moment, and I visited a small producer in Murano di Valpolicella called Tenuta Santa Maria Valverde, and I met an incredible woman named Laria and her husband Nicola, and she offered me a job at that point, and I was still working for the FBI, and I was like, I don't know how. You know, she kind of said, come here, you know, work with me, and I was, that was a very, you know, fresh idea. And I kind of said, okay, I'll let me get back to you. Like, let me think this over. So during that trip, I also visited a school in Bordeaux Sciences Agro. It's kind of like an, you know, Ivy League school in France for, you know, viticulture and enology, and really great wine economics program. And after that trip, I came back to Puerto Rico, and I kind of said, that was that moment I kind of said, you know what, I'm going to take the jump. So I packed three bags. I resigned June 2018. I took a plane to Murano. I decided to, you know, stay with Ilaria in Murano for about 3 months.
Wow. Yeah.
I packed three bags. I sold everything in my apartment. I had a big party. All my girlfriends came and just, I tagged everything and was like, take it. I'm leaving.
That's so cool. That's so courageous. Wow.
Yeah. So, and liberating.
Yeah, I'm sure, right?
Oh my God, just, it was so good.
I've moved a few times. Every time I leave, you know, 50 things behind me, and I feel lighter.
Right?
Yeah.
It was
great. For sure.
So did that, was there for about 3 months, worked under a really amazing consulting enologist, just had a bunch of really great experiences in the Veneto, and all around, traveled a bit during that time throughout Italy. And then in September 2018, I started in Bordeaux.
Yeah.
And started studying for a master there.
And you got your master's, and that's a real serious school, like you said.
Yes.
It is like an Ivy League school. It's just not all wine. It's economics, it's business, it's strategies. It's a pretty crazy school. And of course, that's where you went. And of course, you had to graduate, right?
That was an incredible experience. And I learned so much. And
not to mention, by the way, as a side note, you didn't really speak French that well, or barely, right?
No.
So you go to like an Ivy League school not speaking the language. I mean, that's pretty gutsy.
Yeah, it sure was. So the program is in English, which is incredible and provides just a great opportunity for many, many different people from all over the world that want to study there. But I dove into the culture and, you know, made some French friends and decided I wanted to learn the language. I don't ever feel like there's a scenario where I would live somewhere where, you know, I'm not from or not comfortable, and I wouldn't want to, you know, learn the language. I think it's part of the experience and the challenge.
All right. So now you graduate, and when you're in school, are you thinking you're going to start an import company?
No.
So like, where does that come from? Where's that little seed that blossoms into like, I'm going to be a distributor of fine wine?
Interesting question. Yeah. So I, 2019, I was with the vineyard and winery teams at Chateau L'Ange-Bage. And then the end of 2020, I was with the export department at Gerard Bertrand. And at this point, it was kind of like, okay, what am I going to do when I graduate? Is it going to be more of, you know, the production side, or is it going to be more the business side? Had a very great opportunity that, you know, Gerard offered, which I decided at that point it was time to come home. It was 15 years away from, you know, my family. My mom was at that time living in Florida, and along with my sister, and I said it's time to go back. It's been 15 years. So went back, was going to start a company of a fleet of Piaggio Apes and pour Prosecco from them, and kind of said, you know, that's not the best idea. It's the end of COVID. Nobody will probably hire me. So I kind of thought, I had a conversation actually with one of my uncles, and he said, you know, why don't you bridge the gap between these people you were working and studying with and where you are now in Florida? And I kind of said, well, that's not a bad idea, and I would love to do that. Not knowing, I mean, I'd never sold a bottle of wine in my life.
Right.
So at that point, I said, well, that sounds great. I'll do that. You know, so through that process, this was now probably January 2021, I had registered the International Wine Company, and I said, all right, I'm going to do this, and here we go. I got to find some wine to sell, and let's go. Let's try it. So, and with that same mentality, you know, if it all falls on its face, what's the worst that can happen? And I feel like that mentality is so, so important throughout life with whatever, you know, decision.
What's the worst that can happen? Right.
What's the worst that can happen? I fall on my face and then I do something else, or I start, you know.
And you have a warehouse full of great wine.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
But you can eventually sell some.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
So through that, this was January 2021. Yeah. So was searching online, found a few producers that I knew and met and, you know, worked with or knew through someone else while I was abroad. And that brought me to T. Edward. Mm-hmm. And I kind of said, what is T. Edward and what do they do? I didn't really connect the dots. And I just kind of wrote a message and said, you work with or know these producers that I know, and I'd like to know you and see how we can connect. You know, I didn't really say, hi, I'm opening a distribution company and I'd like to sell the wines. So I get a call one day, and it was one of those days where you're just, I think when you're starting a new business, you're just really down and you don't really know what you're doing. I think I still have days like that, like anybody. And I get a call, and it's a man, and he says, you know, I'm really interested in your story and I'd like to, you know, get to know you more and what your plans are, et cetera. And at the end of the call, you know, he says, okay, well, thanks so much for the chat, and we'll be in touch. And I said, sorry, who are you and what is your name? And
that's great. Yeah.
I'd like to know more about you. And he said, oh, I'm Tom Burns, you know, of Theodore Wines. And I was like, oh, well, thanks so much. It's great to meet you. And from there, we kind of sat down and talked about, you know, what the future would look like, what, you know, my plans were.
And you met Julia, who's like the president, and just
Julia, who I
brilliant as well.
Adore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was like the rest was history. I mean, there's just people that you connect with in life that you know you're gonna be with them for a long time. Yeah. And
well, also it's interesting because I mean, T. Edward has the same. You're looking for that philosophy.
Absolutely.
We're like kindred spirits as far as what we want in the wine world, as far as organic, sustainable, and kind of doing some really cool stuff and helping the right people. Right.
Yes.
So your company is now 2 years or 3 years old.
Yeah. So started in 2021. So yeah, 3 years old.
How's it going?
It's going. It's challenging, but a ton of opportunity on the horizon, which is great. Navigating growth in Florida is super challenging.
It's a difficult state.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a big place.
But you have good support. I see you're connected to a lot of these people that I'm connected, like Shelley Lindgren. We talked about A16, who just wrote her Italian wine book.
And she's amazing.
She's incredible. And then Sibylla Kunz and Vikingo. And you're surrounded by a bunch of strong women as well.
Yes.
Who had to fight to be where they are in this industry for sure. Sibylla couldn't even buy vineyards. They wouldn't sell to a woman. She used to have Marcus go to the auctions when the very times any vineyard comes to sale in Germany. It's hard because they're so limited. But that was what she was fighting against.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. So she makes incredible wine. But
yes.
It's going well.
it's going well, and it's going to continue to grow and get even better. And like you said, with the, you know, with the right support and the right people, I think the sky's the limit. And it's just, how much do you want to grow at that point? You know, when you have good people in your life and, you know, you're surrounded by, and you continue to, whether it's customers or, you know, an importer or people like you, it's, you connect with those people and you can do amazing things.
Yeah. Well, I think you hit on the right word. You're a connector. And you can see that in certain people, and that's why you're going to be incredibly successful.
Oh, thanks.
For sure. So we are at the part of the show where, God comes to you in a dream and says, Dana, you've done an amazing job building an incredible community. You're now 107 years old. I'm going to let you know your last day on the planet. So why don't you plan accordingly? What are you going to eat and what are you going to drink and what are you going to listen to as you float off?
I'm going to eat oysters. That's without question. Yeah.
I'm applauding. my favorite.
That's my favorite food. I'm going to drink probably champagne.
Okay.
Or a really great sparkling wine. I would say champagne, maybe Petra Moise.
Oh, great wine. Great champagne.
Or, and the music would be, I don't know, maybe something from Michael Jackson or something celebratory you know, something fun, uplifting.
Something uplifting. All right, from Michael Jackson. Okay.
And,
I want people to be able to find you. So give us website, Instagram, and anything else. Talk about a new wine that's coming in the portfolio, whatever. Let's do this.
Yeah, so you can find the International Wine Company www.twc.wine on Instagram, the International Wine Company. Where else are we? Facebook, the International Wine Company. In Brevard, my husband is a chef and a restaurant owner, and we have a restaurant called Ember and Oak. You can find a lot of the wines there, and he has
Fantastic.
Just been a huge, huge supporter and an advocate for, you know, the success of the company.
But the perfect marriage, chef and a wine person.
It's incredible. It's a really great team, and he has a lot, you know, to do, I think, also with the success. So,
well, we're going to do a cheers, and I just want to say thank you for being on Drinking on the Job podcast. This is a true pleasure, and I'm so happy I got to hear this story.
Thank you for having me.
Sure. Cheers.
Cheers.
Thanks again for listening. Don't forget to check us out at dotjpodcast.com. Until then, I'll see you at the bar.